Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
The first 5 years of teaching art, I swore I was going to quit like every single day. I would get home and be like, oh my gosh, this is way too much. Like, how can I like juggle all these balls? My brain's going to blow up. I'm quitting tomorrow. Then the next day, I'm quitting tomorrow. And then somehow, like, I don't know why, there was some internal thing that just kept me going. And somewhere along the way, I flipped and I started loving going to work. Like, I really did. I mean, I tell my students now, it's very rare when there's a day that I just don't want to go to work. It's very rare. But then after that happened, I just decided that I was probably on the right path.
I am so pleased to welcome two amazing artist mothers and teachers to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Welcome to Hannah Burnworth and Teresa Vasquez. I'm going to read a little bit about their bios and then have them introduce themselves. Hannah Burnworth is a mixed media paper artist, high school art teacher, and mother of two boys. She's inspired by nature, everyday experiences, and every piece of paper she has ever encountered. And Teresa Vasquez is an artist, a dream midwife, an educator, mother, and grandmother of Afro-Cuban heritage, born and raised in Chicago and living in Fort Wayne, Indiana. She earned a BA in creative writing from Oberlin College and an MFA in studio art from the Art Institute of Chicago. And she is currently a K-12 art teacher at the Fort Wayne Virtual Academy. And I know Hannah and Teresa because, well, we're all local to Fort Wayne-ish, and I curated their work in a show co-curated with Lindy Bazile, another local Fort Wayne artist and curator, and it's been a pleasure to get to know these two, and they have so much in common, I thought they would make such a great interview. So welcome, Hannah and Teresa. I'm so glad to share your work with the community and to be in conversation with you both.
Thanks, Kaylin.
Kaylin, it's really a pleasure.
Yes, no, it is. And we've had so much fun working together already and, you know, seeing each other's work. So this feels like kind of a cherry to put on top of an already sweet experience. So let's begin by having you share something about your childhood that connects to your life as an artist today. I'm wondering if you have always wanted to be an artist. Was arts kind of a part of the way that you grew up? Teresa, will you start for us?
Sure. And thank you very much for having us. So my father has always been an artist and a photographer, a sculptor, and a draftsman. And so I always kind of saw what it was like to be a working artist. He always had another job. He was a machinist.
Okay.
And that played into his art a lot. But that was pretty much my introduction into art. And the other thing about my dad was that he loved to collect things. Mm-hmm. He was kind of a professional dumpster diver, if you will. And he loved to just bring home whatever assorted things he could find. So I think I've inherited kind of a lot of his sensibility where art is concerned and objects.
Do you remember some of like the key things he brought home that were really fun and inspiring?
Mostly cameras. Like he would find Ooh. Cameras all over the place. He would find all kinds of furniture. He would, we would go to this place. I grew up in Chicago and there was a place called Maxwell Street that was a market every Sunday. And it was just blocks and blocks and blocks of just the most random things you could imagine, as well as produce, as well as, you know, just all kinds of goods. Mm-hmm. Electronics, whatever you can think of. Wow. But that was always a place where he found all kinds of amazing objects.
That's so cool. I love that too, thinking about how, you know, your work has a collage, strong collage sensibility, kind of this idea of assemblage, certainly part of your practice. Hannah, can you share something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist today?
Definitely. Both of my parents were musicians, really good musicians, actually, and asked me, sometimes told me how many times I needed to take lessons, piano lessons or violin lessons. And if anyone knows me well, they know that I'm as sweet as pie, but like very quietly defiant. And if somebody suggests something to me, I will probably not do that. So my poor parents, who were amazing and artistic in their own right, did not get their wish, but I did always enjoy art and I loved it. And probably where I found the most inspiration were my teachers, art teachers in school. And I really remember I was an okay student. Things came somewhat naturally to me academically, but I was never the student who was going to shine in, mm-hmm. at an athletic event or whatever. But I remember, I think I was in first or second grade, and I painted 3 watercolor eggs. Mm. And I remember my teacher at the time, Mr. Hochstetler, saying, "You know, these are really great. These are some of the greatest eggs I've ever seen." And then he hung them in the hallway. And then that feeling is addictive, you know, to feel yeah. like mm-hmm. you did something well, or did something that people will recognize you for, and that's mm-hmm. worth doing, and that people will talk about and you can talk about with them. So I definitely remember that as a moment of like, you know what, like maybe I can do this. And then other people who were teachers in my life kind of continued to foster that. That's something I definitely connect to.
I feel like more often we hear about like the creative wound that we experience as a child. So it's really nice to like have you sharing about, you know, a moment where that encouragement was really what sustained you and got you even more interested in art. And to just then, of course, thinking of you both as teachers, it's like, you know, thinking about kind of the circle of your influence and how you treat your students. And it's really cool. Okay, so before we kind of get into the meat of what we're going to talk about, I want you both to describe your work, what it looks like, and a little bit about your process, just so folks can kind of have that in the back of their minds as they're listening. Hannah, we'll start back with you. Can you describe what your work looks like and a little bit about your process?
Sure. I take found papers, handmade papers, really any paper I can get my hands on, and sometimes a little bit of cloth too, and create a composition with those and then run that through my sewing machine. They're usually kind of quilt-like paper thread pieces that hang. Mm-hmm. And I think my favorite part about them is just that every little piece has its own little story. And a lot of the things that I dig out of recycle that students have thrown away will re-show up in the work. Or so it keeps it interesting. Like drawing can be involved and painting can be involved, and all kind of mixed media materials can go into the pieces.
So. I've wondered this about your practice. Like you know, you end up with these pieces that are so multi-layered. You have, they're really collage based, I would say, but painterly in their sensibility, kind of in the way that the compositions end up. I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about, they're not true collage in that you are only bringing material together that you don't really change. You're just kind of assembling them. You actually create like layers of the material. So could you talk a little bit about the like drawing or painting, or like, how do you kind of build up these layers that then you rip apart or cut apart or,
It's kind of maybe a little bit like a paper quilting process, although not even that. I mean, what it really is just a response after a response to what's already there, mm-hmm. and also a way to conserve time. That's how they started. So like, I can't mess up. It's completely impossible. If I don't like that layer, I just take what I want out of it and either cut and put it into a new piece or just leave the part showing that I like and continue to work on top of it. Mm-hmm. So if I can practice and sketch at the same time as I'm creating a final piece. So like if there's a drawing I want to practice with a demo with my kids, I can do it. And if the piece looks cool at the end, that can become the background for the next thing that I'm going to create. And even if I really hate something and chop it completely to bits, that still will land in a box that is going to go on to the next piece. So really there's not, I don't make a mark or cut a piece of paper or even handle one that isn't somehow going to reappear in the next piece. So honestly, I don't even know how to really describe it except for, kind of this paper quilting collage mishmash of like when you're a teacher in a small high school, you teach drawing and painting and everything and sculpture and ceramics and mixed media stuff and bookmaking and, you know, and all of this stuff lands in your room and then it's just there for you. And I just kind of put it all together, I guess.
I love that. Teresa, can you describe your art for someone who maybe hasn't seen it before? Talk a little bit about your process and what kind of the end result looks like.
Mm-hmm, sure. I would say that similarly to Hannah, I love what you said that you can't make a mistake. It's impossible, because I approach my work in a similar way, in that I let me back up for just a moment. But I wanted to make sure to say that is definitely a resonance between our work. I would also say that my work is really based in color. Like color mm-hmm. is the thing that activates me. And because of that, I find that some of the most brilliant colors that I can get are out of inks of various kinds, particularly alcohol ink on Yupo. So that is kind of my favorite medium right now. Most of what I've done lately has been some kind of, I would say, more abstract than figurative, but really trying to evoke a feeling tone. And also I should say that because I am a dream worker and because dreaming is something that greatly influenced my work when I got back into art about maybe 6-7 years ago, the themes that I dream about are things that come out in my work. And again, the brilliance of alcohol ink to me and other types of ink, other types of fluid media really are my go-to because they are very kind of numinous like dreams are. As far as process goes, I do a lot of layering of different kinds of mixed media. Once usually I pour you know, a layer of alcohol ink or several layers of alcohol ink. I will go in with a variety of different markers, pens, watercolors, all kinds of different media to embellish and put a lot of line work. I do a lot of really delicate line work on top of whatever pours that I do. And I also do a lot of collage. And more lately, I have been, you know, creating pieces and actually deciding to cut them up and recombine them. And so I that's kind of another another vein. And then the third vein is paper sculpture. That is something that's really spoken to me. And I look forward to moving more into that. But with the paper sculpture, I'm really wanting to create paper that is marked on both sides and that can be seen from both sides in a, you know, in a sculptural format. So those are just, you know, some of the kind of working processes I've used.
Awesome. Well, you both wear many hats, and I would say, you know, this whole podcast, artist, mother, right, are these two major identities, but you have a third big looming identity. You are both teachers as well. So I want to have you just talk a little bit about your teaching practice. What kind of teacher are you? And just explain like who you teach, where you teach, like a little bit about kind of their perspective of your life as a teacher. Are you full-time? Like, what does your teaching life kind of look like? Let's start back with you, Teresa.
So teaching has been really a part of my life, I would say, since right before the 2000s began, and a lot of it was informal. So I worked for several years at museums. I worked at Chicago Children's Museum. I worked at the Oriental Institute Museum, very different museums. But that really whet my appetite for teaching. And of course, that was in very informal environments. And I went on to be a college professor, which I really enjoyed. And these days, I work in K through 12 public school. The school where I work is a fully virtual school. So we are synchronously virtual. So we meet on Zoom. So I've been on Zoom all day long. And
here you are again.
And here I am again. And, you know, it's kind of like home in certain ways, and has been for a few years now. But I start my day with elementary students. So I have two classes of elementary, and then I have high schoolers. And then in the afternoon, I have middle schoolers. And so a lot of my teaching, because it is delivered online, is very choice-based. I really try to present a variety of different options for students to kind of choose what they would like to actually create. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, you know, I always was kind of a discipline-based art education gal, trying to present the art history and the aesthetics and the critique in each lesson, as well as the art making. And more recently, I have switched over to teaching for artistic behaviors, which is really looking at the 8 studio habits of mind and how do we cultivate like a studio practice in young people. And it's been an interesting journey. I do find that my students appreciate the teaching for artistic behaviors a lot more. Mm-hmm. But I'm just at the beginning of that journey with TAB. And so I'll be real curious to hear what Hannah's experiences are in this regard.
Yeah, real quick, Teresa, I'm just wondering, I'm just personally wondering, because I'm local to you, you know, we're, you could have just come over to my house and recorded this. You're like totally. Right up the street from me, but
yes.
The Fort Wayne Virtual Academy, did that come out of COVID? Is this like serving students who would have been a part of in-person public school, but because of COVID, they now have a completely virtual option?
Well, that's an excellent question, actually, Kaylin, because it did, as far as the timing, it did emerge out of COVID. So our first year was actually last year. So 2021 to 22 was our first year. And so many of our students are students who, for medical reasons or for other reasons, many of them are, you know, vulnerable in terms of their health. Many of mm-hmm. them are. But many of them just simply fare better, let's say, in a virtual school. And that may be for a variety of reasons. One really significant reason is that many of them are real introverts, kind of mm-hmm. like myself and many of our teachers. And so the time, the space, the ability to kind of control your environment and your own space is really conducive for very positive learning at our school. So it started with COVID, and I think as we continue, it's going to probably morph in different ways. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really interesting just to think about. And so the kids are like in their own home environment.
For the most part, and sometimes they're on the road. I had one student who did a tour of Europe in September and October. I have other students who have to travel overseas, students who have family situations where being at home makes sense for them. Yeah. Lots of different things going on. Yeah.
Well, we have to come back to how exactly you teach art mm-hmm. in that kind of situation. But first, let's have Hannah answer this question about what kind of teacher you are, Hannah. I loved, Teresa, the way you kind of ended that with like talking about your philosophy of teaching a little bit. So Hannah, would you dive into that a bit?
Sure. I am a high school teacher. This is my 18th year teaching full-time in Indiana public schools. This is my third school corporation. I teach in North Manchester, which is close to Fort Wayne, so mm-hmm. I'm not too far from you. Primarily a rural school. The real only diversity is socioeconomically. Mm-hmm. So that's fun to try to bring the world to some of these students a little bit. Mm-hmm. And what kind of a teacher am I? Ever changing and evolving teacher, I guess. I can completely relate when I first started teaching too. I was much more, I guess I would say, formal and discipline based and bringing the crit and the history in. I would say now I'm much more of a facilitator. I set up the space and I make sure the ordering is done well. And I complain about my paintbrushes not being rinsed out. And I do a lot of like individual, like I will set projects and pace the class and then as many twists and turns as we can possibly take while we're in there. Mm-hmm. I try to allow that to happen. And especially as students get out of my intro classes and into the upper level studio classes, I try to help them take as much ownership as they can kind of their body of work. And we start to talk about what constitutes a body of work. And then my final goal for them really is to take AP, which is a college level class. And if they can pass the exam with a high enough score, they can, that can then become college credit.
Wow.
And whether or not they
do you teach that too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. I teach all of the classes in our
I was going to say, how many classes exactly are in your canon?
Well, because I have to stack classes. So like my painting 1, 2, and 3 are together. And also maybe like 3 drawing kids who couldn't fit it into their schedule. I have actually 16 attendances that I take currently
on
our attendance system. So I'm actually technically prepping for 16 classes, but that sounds a lot more daunting than it is, because by the time they're in those upper level classes, they're just kind of making their own choices and working along with us. But yeah, teaching in a smaller school where you're the only one has its benefits. I can make a lot of choices about my department and how I want to do things. But I also have to be, you know, I'm kind of like a dabble in a little bit of everything, and I'm the master of none. I think that's why my work looks the way that it does, because it's like a little bit of everything. That's really the only thing I'm good at. Like I can't work in one pure media because I can't master anything, because I just don't have time, and that's just not how my brain works.
And what does that even really mean? Like if, if the world was full of masters, like how boring.
How boring. That's right. So it's like the painting and the drawing and the sculpture and the ceramics and the AP and the whatever. So but I
that's
am not
crazy.
You know, after 18 years, you would think like I've got all that on lock. I know what's going on in every class, but that's really not true. Most of the time,
you're dealing with different students, you know, so.
That's what I was going to say. The kids are always different, and they're always, you know, sending you on different journeys and errands. Yeah.
Teresa, I'm just wondering, how do you make sure students have all the right materials for, you know, like, do they just show up with a roll of toilet paper and a few markers and then all their markers are dry, you know, like you're that control of like, or the burden of dealing with materials like in your own classroom, like you don't have that, but I would imagine that would make it so challenging to teach.
It's incredibly challenging, the issue of materials. And I will tell you, for example, I mean, I find myself always saying, you know, and I publish on our LMS, you know, these are the materials we're going to be using next week. And then, you know, of course, when we get on the Zoom, I announce them, I show them on my document camera. And then there's a litany of, oh, Ms. V, I don't have this. Ms. V, I don't have this. Ms. V, I don't have this. And so we kind of run through other possible options. So it's just an endless type of adaptation a lot of times. But fortunately, I received a grant from the Fort Wayne Community Schools Foundation to buy materials. And in fact, they just arrived earlier this week. So we're going to be able to distribute, and they're not really extravagant materials by any means, but, you know,
just to have some consistency though, you know?
Yes. And I mean, we have some basic materials, but we also have the challenge of, you know, because we are a school that is completely online, sometimes students don't have the transportation even to come to our building. And we don't have the postage to send it out. So, I mean, what probably is going to happen soon is that I will just load up my car and, you know, just deliver them myself, because
let's coordinate. I'm sure I can take a batch somewhere and you can take a batch somewhere. We'll get coffee in the middle. Okay.
Well, you're so gracious to offer. That's very wonderful of you.
Oh my gosh. Like getting kids art supplies that they need that public education purchase. Like, let's do this. This could be a whole thing.
Fantastic.
That sounds literally like a nightmare to me.
It is a nightmare. And you know, Hannah, like supplies is so huge.
I did an entire semester's curriculum in a bag for all my students when we were
in lockdown.
Okay. And they came and picked it up. And
and you're like,
yeah.
And oh, still you didn't have that in your bag? Oh,
their bags were in their dad's car, and their bags were in their dog's mouth. Like their bags were.
Oh my gosh!
Know where their bags were going. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Okay. So how did you both arrive at the role of artist and teacher? Like this kind of question of, was it just a practical job that was still in the career zone? Did you ever think about just trying to make it as an artist? Or was it more, I wanted to be a teacher and I liked art? Like, I'm kind of curious about the relationship between your own identity as an artist and then, you know, this career that you've chosen to be an art teacher. Hannah?
I'm still working to figure that question out every day. I went through childhood loving art, and in college I had 5 different majors.
Wow.
And ended up taking a year off in the middle and spending a year plus a summer away and in Germany. And I was an au pair. I just went to school. And so what did I do while the kids were in school? I took art classes while I was there. And my art teacher while I was there was like, you would be a fabulous art teacher. You know, you should really think about teaching art. So when I came back, that's kind of what I changed my major to. And then I started it. And then for the first 5 years of teaching art, I swear I was going to quit like every single day. I would get home and be like, oh my gosh, this is way too much. Like, how can I like juggle all these balls? My brain's going to blow up. I'm quitting tomorrow. And the next day I'd be like, I'm quitting tomorrow. And then somehow, like, I don't know why, there was some internal thing that just kept me going. And somewhere along the way I flipped and I started loving going to work. Like I really did. I mean, I tell my students now, it's very rare when there's a day that I just don't want to go to work. It's very rare. And so I don't know, but then after that happened, I just decided that I was probably on the right path.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I got here. I guess just like maybe a day after day commitment to something that like internally I really knew that I loved.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever struggled like just wanting to be an artist full time? Like, but then you also have this, you know, successful career as a teacher. Like, how do you kind of?
Yes. You know, like once a school year, I'll get like totally overwhelmed. Then I'll come home and I'll be like, this is it. Now I'm just going to be a full-time artist. I'm going to do this. But then when I step back and really think about how much I love it, I don't think I would be happy without sharing this in the same way that I do with my students, at least at this point. Now, I can see myself getting tired eventually. It happens to many educators, many really good educators that just can no longer put forth the amount of energy to help 130 students and then the next day, 130 students and then the next day, you know. So I see it happen, and I've put like some plans and some goals into place where eventually I think I will just be an artist. Not just, but like that will be my full-time profession. But right now I love how they meld, and I like getting the same check every couple weeks. And I like having insurance.
That is a benefit.
Yeah. So, you know, I do like the consistency of it as well. Like the practical side is I highly recommend.
Yeah.
Yeah, the grind is, it's real.
Mm-hmm. Teresa, what about you? I'm wanting to know like how you became an arts teacher and if you ever feel like it competes with just being a full-time artist, if being a full-time artist is even part of your goal or, yeah.
Well, I would say that I did go into art school with the thought. And by the way, I went to art school at age 30.
Yes.
34. So
after you had a kid or two, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, after I had two children and you know, so I had already been working in the museum environment, and I just wanted to really delve in. And I actually studied art and technology. So I was doing a lot of multimedia, a lot of sound art and things of that nature. But I always envisioned that I would be teaching. And so I did end up at a college teaching, but oddly enough, what I ended up teaching for like 9 years was Spanish.
Oh.
Which I, you know, it just was one of those things that kind of fell into my lap. But all along I was like, hey, but I, you know, I studied art. Like art is what I want to teach. And so I moved to Indianapolis in 2016. And at the end of that year that I was there, at the end of 2016, I was hired at the Indianapolis Art Center as a teaching artist. And so that was kind of the first time that I was able to align my teaching to, you know, what I had studied, what I really wanted to do. And really since then, I've kind of gone back and forth, Spanish art, even at my current school, I have taught Spanish as well. So I love teaching art so much. And you know, the thing about it is the energy and the excitement that I get, especially teaching the youngest students, just the passion and the love that they bring to art, even if they're not like super into art or even particularly talented in art, they just bring such an energy that it just makes my days shine. And I'm so glad I get to start my day with them every day. It's a beautiful thing.
This episode of the Artist Mother Podcast is sponsored by the Thriving Artists Map. As an artist, it can sometimes be a struggle to find our compass, to remain rooted in our goals, and to stay on course. There are so many options out there, so many ways to exist in the world, and the ride is often rather lonely. You all probably know by now that community building is my jam, and I'm always trying to figure out the secret to creating a life as an artist that is sustainable and rich with relationships. I co-host a network called the Thrive Together Network with the amazing Jamie Smith, an artist from Vancouver, Canada. On the network, we host weekly art and tea sessions. We have two virtual art residencies a year that our members participate in. We run an exhibition program where everyone commits to showing their work and so much more. And in 2023, Jamie and I are really rolling out the red carpet for our community. We have created a master plan for our year and have called it the Thriving Artists Map. This map is part curriculum, part planner, with lots of big sister energy to help support and encourage you as you live out your art life and career in 2023. It follows the events, programming, and flow of our network and has so many activities and tips to help you stay on course with your own career goals. We really feel like it's going to be a game changer for so many artists to have this foundation to sort of lean into and this support to receive to move through a yearly rhythm deeply rooted in community. We are so excited about this. We are not alone as we are out here doing this big, important work as artists. And we want you to know that you have everything within you to create the career you want, but doing it with other artists supporting you is literally the best. So you can join us by heading to thrivetogethernetwork.com to learn all about the map, all about the network, and everything that is involved when you sign up and join our community. You will receive a free downloadable copy of the entire Thriving Artists map once you join the network. And again, that information is available at thrivetogethernetwork.com. We cannot wait to do this work with you. Well, why don't you tell me, Teresa, how you like literally balance the role of pursuing your own art career, making art, having a studio practice, and then also having this full-time education job?
It's something that I have to accept that things will come at the time that they can. So for example, right now, out in the she shed, my studio space, it's 30 degrees and I can't heat it with a space heater because there's also a mower and gasoline in there. So, you know, it's a three season thing and I just have to accept that. So winter for me is either going to be, you know, doing encaustics in my home and not in my studio, or doing a lot of hand embellishment or collage. So there's certain things that are kind of seasonally organized. Mm-hmm. Now, the good news is that over at the She Shed, it's in the backyard of my oldest daughter and the grandchildren. And so whenever I go to take care of my grandchildren, you know, once or twice a week, I'm over there, you know, by the she shed. So it's a bonus, you know, and I can, you know, sneak out when the baby's asleep and, you know, and get some work done. But there's a lot of juggling and that just simply, I mean, I have a hard time remembering my adult life, you know, without that kind of juggling. It just simply is a part. And I don't know really what I would do with myself. You know, my youngest son is 12, so I still have about, you know, 7 years of kind of seeing a child through of my own. So there's, it's been just a running theme in my whole life to juggle those things. I don't know what I would do with my time otherwise, you know?
I think you'd make lots of art.
Well, that's the retirement plan.
Yes.
To, you know, retire and be able to really focus. Seriously though, I hope when I am able to retire, if I'm able to retire, to be able to concentrate on the art completely.
Amazing. Hannah, what about you? Just like, what is the day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month balance of trying to pursue your own art career alongside having a full-time job as an educator?
Well, again, always a work in progress for me. One key that I've really learned is like, I really rely on my upper level students for critique, for support, for time. They have become my kind of peers in a way, and probably a different way than any other teacher has with their students. It's something I love about teaching high school, and it's something I really love about teaching the upper level classes in high school. I get the bulk of my work done during AP time. AP time at the beginning of the year, they're starting to form their portfolio, and I always work along with them to kind of continue mine. And I can work during those classes for a little bit and then help students work for a little bit, help students. I can work during my prep. I can work for a half an hour after school before we go home, and I can leave things set up. Like there's one table by my desk and one closet that are always set up the way that I want. So that's kind of become my studio space that I just know that I'm going to be in every day, and I'm going to be in the same rhythm, the same class periods every day. And I know that I can somehow weave a few hours into my day. And I get better and better at weaving that, like doing demos for the classes that I know I can rework back into my work. So anything that I can like kill two birds with one stone, anytime I can do that, I've just learned to do that in my classroom. Things that they work on that they don't want are exercises, like those shaded spheres. I just keep them all. I'm like, does anybody want these back? No. And I just am like, sweet, I'm going to cut these up then. So anything like that, I've just gotten good at being smart. Like, how can I channel their energy and my energy kind of back into this work? And then how can I show them and give them energy through this work? It's kind of like a, just a ping pong game between me and my students.
I just want to interrupt you and say, I think the amazing thing about that though, is they are watching an artist at work every day, like a professional artist. So it's not just that, it's not just like, yeah, I'm a teacher and I just want to work and also do my job. It's like, no, you are integrating it in a way that they get to be a part of your practice, which like what other high school kid gets to kind of be in an artist's studio every time they walk into their own art classroom, which is so cool.
Yeah, it is cool. I love it. And when I used to start doing that, I used to think, oh my gosh, like, should I take this 10 minutes and come over here and work on my art? And eventually I just realized they would ask questions about it and look at it and watch me work and learn from it. And more of my students are doing paperwork and stitching on it and binding books and things that I'm doing. And yeah, I've found it to be really meaningful for both sides. And then it also frees me up to have time with my family. I maybe bring my own work home like one night a week or one weekend night a week. I'll try to carve out of a chunk of a few more hours, maybe of something that I really need to concentrate fully on. But I really don't, I hardly bring anything home. I mean, my boys are 8 and 10, and most of the time they're with me. And so we have, there's a lot to do.
Right.
So I try, you know, that's how I try to balance it.
Awesome.
But I don't know if I do. I mean, I don't know if you guys ever feel like the word balance is just like this one more weird word. I'm like, what does that even mean? I don't know. Like you were saying, it's juggling more than balance.
Juggling. That's what it is. I mean, there's a balance. I mean, on a whole, when you look at like the whole span of time, but there's ebbs and flows of certain things. Sometimes they are seasonal. Sometimes they have to do with, you know, what time of the semester is it? And of course there's summer. I mean, that's the beauty of teaching. It's just the glorious summers that we get to enjoy.
I do also have to say that another big part of why I'm able to keep up practice is I try to do like one or two short residency or workshop experiences a year. And I am good at grinding. I can like put myself into a mode, and I just got home from Stay Home Gallery and I just was in the studio from like 6:30 a.m. to like 8:30 p.m. every day. And I just, so
those talk about a seasonal artist. That's the way to do it. I love it. Well, I feel like the third kind of big hat is the one we haven't really addressed, is like, you know, you both are parents as well. And so you're also kind of balancing not only your own art career, your own full-time job, but then, you know, you're a full-time parent as well. So just curious about like, even the balance of, you know, having kids and a teaching career and, you know, an art practice, like, do you ever feel, I don't know, like how have you kind of integrated, I guess, motherhood into your artist life and into your art teaching life, Teresa?
Let's see.
And you have two kids, Teresa, that are very far apart in age, right?
So I have three kids. I have a 29-year-old, a 27-year-old, and a 12-year-old.
Okay.
So I essentially have two generations of children. And then I have grandchildren from 8 to 3 weeks old.
Wow.
So, so there, as far as motherhood has always been a part of my experience as an artist. When I was in school, it really was an extremely challenging time. And unfortunately, one of the things that has given in this pursuit of the artist mother lifestyle has been marriage.
Mm.
My first marriage broke up, I would not say due to, but in the midst of being in graduate school. And unfortunately, that is not a completely unheard of situation. Mm-hmm. But what it has afforded me, this fact of living essentially alone part of the time, is it's afforded me a lot of extra time,
mm-hmm.
Which I really cherish. But at the same time, with my grandchildren, I actually, this is a funny story. I was doing yarn painting today in class. That was one of several different projects that we were doing today. And I was so excited with the, you know, yarn painting. I thought, oh, I'm going to bring a bunch of yarn over and we're going to do a yarn painting project, you know, with the grandchildren. And, you know, I brought it out and they were just like, oh, we'll do that later, you know, and they went in the other room to play on their devices. And I was like, crap, you know, aren't you excited about doing yarn painting? And they're like, oh, grandma, she's, you know, she's always wanting us to do art. And so there's, you know, there's that they have their own ideas, their own way of wanting to do things. And, you know, I haven't seen any of them be, you know, really dedicated to art, but, you know, maybe that will change. Maybe it won't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a thread, and it's something that I hope that they will be able to look at those experiences and, you know, in the future and, you know, derive something positive from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hannah, anything you want to say about just bringing in the mother role into this mix of being an artist and teacher?
Yeah, it's intense. It is intense. It's you know, the biggest ball of the juggling act, for sure. And I've also had a situation in the last, really since lockdown, where I've primarily been the parent that is with my children the most. And so that has changed, and jobs have changed and schedules have changed. And so trying to adjust to that and adjust to just being with kids. My sons are 8 and 10. I don't know. I'm just trying to teach them to be their own people and that it's cool to be like pretty much whatever they want to be, as long as they're nice and they're kind, mm-hmm. you know, like I feel a huge responsibility, like raising like two little white boys right now, you know, mm-hmm. like they're 8 or 10. I just want them to be use kindness, because you're going to have some power out there. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we just talk about that. Mm-hmm. As long as they're nice people, I feel like I'm doing all right. Mm-hmm. I want them to latch on to the arts and to all kinds of things, but you know, they want to be with their buddies and like play mm-hmm. outside and yeah, play their video games and like occasionally draw, and they are playing their instruments right now. So I'm just trying to expose them to the world. And I really, really love to expose them to travel. Mm-hmm. I guess like that's really like my kind of unique parent goal. And I took my kids I met a friend once I got there, but we went internationally for the first time. I took them by myself, through customs and stuff this last summer to Iceland. We went to Iceland and it was the best. And just watching them absorb that and be so open, and they met kids on the playground and, you know, like marveled at the fact that there were like 10 eggs instead of a dozen and, you know, just like back to the eggs, I guess. But I just want to give them an appreciation of like kindness and the rest of the world. And then they can just hopefully be cool. Yeah. At the end of that. I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, I think so often teachers, especially female identifying teachers, take on a mothering role with their students. So, you know, just from my perspective, like hearing both of you talk, you have so many people in your life who you're caring for. Like you have all these students, you know, your own boys, you know, going through like relationship stuff, and Teresa throwing in grandkids in the mix that you care for consistently. I'm wondering like how you both find time for yourself and what like nourishing yourself looks like in this season. I don't know if, is that even a possibility in your life right now? How do you kind of prioritize self-care, and how do you make sure that you're not, you know, just running on E all the time? Because I know when I am not prioritizing myself, I am a pretty shitty mom. So, you know, like I have to pour in a little bit so that I can pour out. And I just think of you, you know, my husband is a college professor and just, you know, has students all the time who want something from him, you know? So just wondering about that balance of like all this pouring out that both of you do, and how do you pour back in, Teresa?
Well, I do have, and I really feel grateful for this, but I have an arrangement with my with the father of my son who lives here in town, where I do have a lot of alone time. And I do have some consistent things that I like to do for self-care. One of them is meditation. I meditate every day, and that has been a practice for me that's been really life-changing, life-saving at certain times. And so I don't meditate for 2 hours like I used to, you know, at a different point in time in a different situation. But I, you know, I do make a point of doing that on a daily basis. I also live near what we call the River Greenway, along one of the rivers here in town. And that affords me a lot of exercise opportunities. So I get out there and walk and bike and do different things. And speaking of getting out of town, I spend most of my weekends out of town. And while I haven't been outside of the Midwest since COVID, I do get, you know, to Chicago, to Detroit, to Indianapolis, to Kalamazoo, to different cities in the region on a pretty regular basis, both for pure recreation or to show. So that is an exciting possibility. So pretty much every weekend I'm out of here by, you know, Friday at 5:30, I'm gone.
Well, I was going to suggest a Saturday studio hour. I guess I'll have to do a weeknight.
We can arrange that. We can schedule it, though.
We'll have to go visit Hannah because she's out of town.
Ah, yeah. There you go. Yeah, let's do that.
Hannah, what about you? How do you find nourishment? What are some practices for self-care, considering how much you give to others in this season of your life?
Well, luckily, I'm a very social person. So for me, self-care involves talking to others. And since I'm really close to my students, and now that my kids are getting older, it really is nourishing for me to be in communion with others. I am actually an extrovert and definitely gain energy from other people. So that in itself is very helpful. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the time really comes for me in like snippets. And my meditation time every day is walking my dog. Mm-hmm. And I love my dog, and my dog is super cool and very chill buddy. And he just walks along really nice and slowly at whatever pace I feel like going at. And so we just chit chat, and then I'm quiet and I can reflect and just try to be empty for a little while. So definitely like walking my dog and finding these snippets of time for me are nourishing, and just mm-hmm. and being with people really for mm-hmm. me is nourishing. So that's that definitely helps. And then sometimes drinking alcohol also helps.
Some good food. I know you love some good food, Hannah.
Yeah. So, or yes, like eating some really good food and just drinking a beer. That's pretty close to heaven for me.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
Okay. Just a couple more questions for both of you. What before we wrap up, Hannah, back to you. I'm wondering if you could describe a moment in your art career where you were so proud. Like, what was one of your biggest accomplishments so far? I feel like I know what you're going to say, but I want to hear it.
Yeah. Well, probably my biggest accomplishment. So ArtLink is a gallery, artist mother hosted Painting at Night there. But it's a gallery in Fort Wayne, and it's like a mid-sized gallery kind of for mid-career artists. And it's a beautiful space. And I did the members show last year, and I walked in just to see the show, and I won the show or whatever. I got like I was chosen mm-hmm. one person is chosen to have their own solo show the following year. And it was me, and I was like, oh, I took my boys there. We were just going to go there quick before dinner. And, I was like, oh my gosh. So I am working towards a solo show in May. And so
that's well, when exciting. That show is up, that's going to be your next proudest moment. And what a show that's going to be. I'm so excited.
I'm really excited. I feel like it's going to be a really good show. So.
Yes. Teresa, what about you? Tell me about a moment where you've just been really proud of your work and the art career that you've built for yourself.
Well, I have to say that it really is the year 2022. This has just been a phenomenal standout year as far as art has been concerned. I had my first solo show at Wondercommer Company, a gallery here in town. And right after that show, I showed at the Indianapolis Museum of Art, Newfields, for a show that was called The Truth of Freedom. And that was one of those, it was almost like a fluke. The curator was somebody that I had been a part of a creative entrepreneur program with. And it just, you know, kind of fell into place. And then there was the show that you and Lindy curated. And I mean, it's just been...
Yeah, you've been like snowballing it.
Oh my gosh, it's been a real standout year. And so it's been very exciting to have all of these things happening. And so, this is the time. This is the time.
So excited for you. Okay. And I would love for you both to share maybe a few big goals that you're working on either in the next year or couple years for your art or personal goals.
Well, I'm definitely working towards that show that will be in the 6 month time range. And then, after that, there's a few kind of more local, smaller museums that I want to pitch a couple shows to. And after that? I don't know.
And that's okay. Teresa, what about you? What are some goals you've got kind of on your horizon?
Well, a big goal for me, and I'm not sure the timeline, I'm not sure if it's a year, 5 years, but I would really like to do a show with my dad. My dad is going to be 90 next year, and I would love to do a two-person show with him. I'm looking at curating that and pitching it to some different places. I think the location really needs to be Chicago, mm-hmm. but who knows? There's other possible places where it could be. But I think our work also, I mean, I have been so greatly influenced by his work that, you know, my work really is in the shadow of his, and I mean that in the best way possible, because I've kind of worked through the other shadow as far as feeling like, oh, I can't be a legitimate artist because my dad is the legitimate artist. Mm. And so I think it will be a beautiful opportunity to to show how generations can, you know, bring art forward.
Mm. Awesome. All right. Well, we are at the end of our interview. I always close with 5 questions for everybody to get to know you a little bit better as we wrap up. So I want to know, 1, who is your biggest art crush, Hannah?
Oh my gosh. Well, pretty much everyone I follow on Instagram right now is an art crush. So that is a very long list. I love Elizabeth Murray. I love to go into a museum and see her big, colorful shapes, like plastered up there. And I also just went to the Art Institute last week with students, or the week before. And we saw a Bridget Riley exhibition, and so many of her cut paper pieces, like for op art, I just wanted to take them down off the wall and go kind of recreate that. so I don't know that she's like a long-term art crush, but she's like a new one. I bought a book and I like pore over it right now.
Wow. I love finding a new big art crush.
That's and I just like her design background. I mean, I'm very much a designer too, like mm-hmm. moving things around and designing and redesigning. So mm-hmm. those are definitely a couple.
Mm. Teresa, who's your biggest art crush?
Probably Christina Quarles. I really love her work, and I was fortunate enough to see her show at the MCA. And that was just phenomenal. I love her abstracted figures, her colors, her textures, patterns, and everything along those lines. Loy Halliwell, who I understand you've also had an Artist Mother podcast. I really love her work. Chabalala Self is one I really love. These artists that I mentioned, particularly Christina Quarles and Chabalala Self, are pushing me to really examine how I can put more of the figure into my art, because right now it's more sort of abstract and not necessarily representational in a literal way. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's a good influence on me to see how to marry those together.
Definitely. Okay. What is your favorite place where is your favorite place to travel, or a dream trip that you'd like to go on? Back to you, Hannah.
Well, I have so many dream trips because I love my kids, you know, like Japan and New Zealand and like Chile and Argentina and I don't know, so many dream trips. But I really, I think this summer, I really want to try to go to Scotland. I'm obsessed with Jamie from Outlander. he's pretty fine. And I would really like to go just like
meet a Scottish lad.
Yeah, I want to just pretend.
Maybe
like
you should leave your kids at home in this
my
trip.
Boyfriend. I might, you know, I might just get a little tiny pair of shorts and wear them around.
Yes.
I don't know.
Teresa, what about you? Favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
I would love to go with my son to New York. I've owed him that trip since before COVID. We were actually going to go over summer of 2020 to New York. So that's an outstanding trip. And with my sweetheart, with my partner, I want to go to Paris. Yeah. Neither of us have ever been. And I think that would be very exciting. And eventually, you know, if things go down in a way that's really negative in 2024 for the election, I think New Zealand
I don't think it's going to happen.
Really good.
What'd you say? New Zealand?
New Zealand. Yes.
Yeah. I know.
I'm planning on like getting to a fjord in Norway. That's my back.
Yes. Us too. We have our eyes set on Scandinavia for sure. Okay. Back to you, Hannah. Tell me a book or a film that has been a big inspiration to you.
I am actually not a huge reader or film watcher. I think because of these balls, I do things in such small pieces, like small bits. Mm-hmm. I'm more of like a show watcher and like a short story reader. So I love the book How to Breathe Underwater by Julie Orringer. If you've ever read those short stories, they're like 10 pages each. And you feel like you read a book at the end of every 10 pages because they're just jam-packed with a lot of goodies, I think, and a lot of emotional just, I don't know, epiphanies or something.
Yeah.
but yeah, so I love that book. And I love HBO. I love an HBO series. I love a Netflix series. I'm not going to lie. I love them.
Yeah, just something you can get into.
I love Outlander. I love Yellowstone. I love Ozark. Just everything that everybody's watching right now. That's kind of like my brain downtime, which I really love. And then also like I did, upon Kaylin's recommendation, listen to, I'm going to throw a podcast in here, Death of an Artist. And
so good.
I've been asking myself questions for days after that.
So good. Teresa, you have to listen to Death of an Artist if you have not yet. It's amazing.
Well, no, I haven't. And I'm huge into podcasts as well.
Yes.
So for me, I will say that what has influenced me the most in terms of books is the work of Adrienne Marie Brown. We were talking about this the other day, Kaylin. But Pleasure Activism is a beautiful book. And Emergent Strategies was kind of where I started with her. Octavia Butler, of course. But I am like an astrology nerd. I love astrology. And Visionary Activist Astrology by Caroline Casey is what I'm chewing on right now. And it's really blowing my mind. I had the opportunity to interview Caroline Casey, about 3 years ago. And she's just such an amazing woman. And I had not actually read her book. And it's totally blowing me away.
Awesome. Great recommendations, both of you. Okay, two more. What is your favorite meal, Hannah?
I like a smash burger, like a burger with like everything on it. You know, the kind that are like fried down and smooshed together. And like the bun is really buttery. It's probably just so bad for you. But I love that with just a cold beer.
Yeah.
That probably takes the cake for me.
Teresa, favorite meal?
Wow. Oh, I love to cook. Like cooking is, I mean, before there was art, there was cooking. But I like a lot of ethnic foods. Mm-hmm. My Cuban food, of course, but I'd say probably my go-to is going to be either chicken or turkey fried rice. Mm. Or maybe a chicken curry, a red chicken curry with white rice. Either of those. And if it's mom's cooking, it would definitely be paella. She makes like the most amazing paella, and then some flan for dessert. Yeah.
Oh, now I'm hungry.
Me too.
Okay. I always like to close by offering you a place to give a shout out to somebody who's supported you in your work in a big way. Hannah?
I definitely want to shout out to my students and my kids, and to Jabin, and my mom and dad. And my crit group, Mindy and Noel and Colleen and Jen. We were a crit group together a few years ago, and we've met in person once, and we're going to do it again coming up soon. So
that's awesome.
They've been great in just supporting me with little crits and stuff. So,
yeah. Amazing. Teresa, who do you want to shout out?
Let's see. I want to shout out Robert Moss, my dream teacher. I want to shout out Didel Reverda from Indy, who was a big proponent of my work. I want to shout out Lindy. I want to shout out you, Kaylin. I want to shout out Dan Swartz for being a terrific friend to me personally, but also to the arts in general in Fort Wayne. I also want to shout out Clydia Early of BIPOCA Incubator and Gallery, who is, again, a wonderful person in town who is a true proponent of the arts here. And my family for putting up with me and allowing me to do the art and to take some risks that other parents, other family members maybe would not have taken, and giving me that grace to do that.
All right. Where can folks find you? What's your website, Instagram handle? Tell everybody how they can find and follow. Hannah?
Probably Instagram's most updated. I'm Milk House Studio.
Milk House Studio with no S at the end.
Milk House Studio.
Yes. And Teresa, what about you?
Well, my website is, dreamingwoke.com, and my Instagram is dreamingwoke also. And if you go to Instagram, you probably see whatever the link of the day is. I'm going to put a link tree up, I promise, one of these days, because they're just kind of growing a little bit too wild. So
absolutely. Well, thank you both. What a pleasure. And again, it's just been great to get to know you and see your work in person. And I'm feeling grateful to be in community with you. So thank you for, coming on the platform and sharing about your work and just for all you do as an arts educator. I know it's not the easiest time to be a teacher, so we really appreciate you.
Thanks, Kaylin.
Thank you, Kaylin. It's a pleasure.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.